Blog Talk Radio.
Spirit of Truth Ministry now presents The Bible on Trial, a show that tests the teachings of Christianity against the words and the teachings that Jesus Christ gave to his own eyewitness disciples while he was here on earth. Join us for a challenging and unique study into truth, justice, and the kingdom of heaven. Hello, everyone. This is The Bible on Trial, brought to you by Spirit of Truth Ministry. My name is Dennis Neufeld, and I am sitting here with Suzette, Larry, and Rick, and we are about ready to start our Bible study today, our study into truth. We encourage you to go to our chat room. You can ask questions, make comments if you wish. And also, I have linked our two websites there for your perusal, if you wish. Our WordPress website is doing very well. In fact, I'll have to find the link. I changed a couple of things here recently, and I dropped a couple of things. We went to a different internet provider, and we are now just the speed is just orders of magnitude faster than what we were using. If you have any interest in talking to us, you are more than welcome to push the number one button on your keypad, and that will indicate to me that you want to come on the air with us, and we'd be delighted to have you do that. Today is, incidentally, it's April, isn't it?
Yep, still April.
April 19th.
May.
Or is it May?
No, it's May. Yeah. Time is flying fast.
Oh, yeah, it is still May. It is still May. We are delighted to have you here with us. Let's have prayer and we'll get started. Thank you, Father, for everything that you have done today for us so that we can be here to learn the truth from your words, the words of Jesus Christ. Thank you for not making us and allowing us to think like the masses, to think like the hive, as it were, but to think clearly and independently so that we can understand what Jesus really said when he was here on earth. Thank you for this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Good morning, Suzette.
Morning.
Morning, Larry.
Morning.
And good morning, Rick. It is a delight to have all of you here with us today.
Is
that any
guests on?
We do. 360. That's Roger.
Okay.
Yeah. John should be back next week, I guess. Good morning, Roger.
Welcome, everyone, to another time of study and a time of considering the information that God has given us. This morning before the study, we were having a good discussion.
Yes, we
did. And here's the bottom line for all of this. We've been talking about the judgment. We've been talking about prophets and the role of a prophet in the judgment. The judgment occurs, and I'm not talking about the process of the judgment. I'm talking about the at the conclusion of the judgment, there is a pronouncement of the verdict where those who are lacking, if you will, are informed of the punishment that they will receive, and those who are found worthy will be given the reward that they have received. When you talk about the judgment to those who believe in God, Elohim, the God who created this world, most will tell you that the God they worship is not judgmental. That the God they worship is a God of love, and love excludes any type of judgment which determines guilt or innocence. When we, if we have something that tells us to look at what's going on in the country today and in the world, and you see the argument to the one side and the argument to the other side, and those who prefer not to argue but to demonstrate, and in their demonstration they choose to destroy, why are they doing what they are doing? And should they be brought to justice? And what would be the process that would be determine what they would receive for what they have done? And what we see in this country is that what the perpetrators receive depends upon the established political leadership of the city or the county or state in which they reside. What became crystal clear to me last night is that the truth is that which is true, not that which we believe to be true, or that which we choose to be true or want to be true. The truth is what is true, and in the judgment, that will be the ultimate determining factor.
So that's like the difference between reality and individual perceptions of reality.
Right. If you watch the news, you hear a lot about fake news.
Oh, yeah.
But
sorry about that. I have a I'm getting physical therapy set, and they don't have, you know, you have to go way out in order to be able to get an appointment. Well, they called me and said, I can get one Tuesday and one on Thursday next week. I didn't actually expect that. So I had to answer that. By the way, just apropos of nothing, the lady who is going to be doing this she's a doctor of physical therapy. And the surgeon who did this, my amputation, said that he says I probably will not be able to play, you know, really play guitar because I won't have any flexibility in this knuckle. And after my assessment this last surgery by this lady, Heather, she said, oh, I'm a guitarist. And trust me when I tell you, you'll be playing guitar again because I have just what you need. So, and she says, now it's going to hurt. You have to work really hard, but I'm going to get back. So I find it fascinating. I'm sorry. And I'll turn off all that stuff, but I got to tell you, that made me feel so much better.
So we'll see if it's the truth or not.
Well, I'm only going by what she told me. Yeah. She is, in this case, she's the expert. But the thing that I have to do is I have to do every single thing that she says.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly like she said it.
Yeah.
And I have instructions, and she's given me sheets, and I have to do certain manipulations on my finger, and I'm at three times a day. You know, I have to do all that, and I'm doing it. And I'll be dipped if I will not be. And I told her, I said, I'm going to be probably the most compliant patient you've ever had.
Don't we
have to be the most compliant patient?
Yes.
When we're thinking in terms of how truth operates?
Yep.
Jesus began to speak to them in parables once again. The kingdom of the heavens may be compared to a king who gave a feast for his son's wedding. Mm-hmm. Matthew 22. He sent his servants to call those who had been invited, but they would not come. Next, he sent some more servants. Tell those who have been invited, he said, that I have my banquet all prepared. My oxen and fatted cattle have been slaughtered. Everything is ready. Come to the wedding. They're not interested.
By the way, I like that translation. I like what, you know, in the NASB, it says they were unwilling to come. But what you said from the Jerusalem Bible indicates a decision.
Mm-hmm.
They were not interested.
They just weren't interested.
Yeah.
One went off to his farm, another to his business, and the rest seized his servants, mm-hmm. mistreated them, and killed them.
Hmm. Wow.
The king was furious.
No kidding.
He dispatched his troops.
Yeah.
Destroyed those murderers and burnt their town. Then he said to his servants, the wedding is still ready. Now I added still. And the reason that I added still is because we see in the first two times it was ready. So the king would not go, okay, so nobody's interested, send back the flowers, send back the food, take the tables down, put the chairs away, and we're going to start all over again.
Yep, that didn't happen.
No, the wedding is ready. Mm-hmm. It is still ready. But as those who were invited proved to be unworthy, what does unworthy mean?
Did it meet requirements?
Well, yes. No.
How did I know that?
Those who were, past tense, mm-hmm. invited, were unworthy. So who were those who were invited?
I find it interesting. This, in the Strong's lexicon for Greek, the word is axios. D514, it means deserving, comparable, or suitable. That word suitable is a qualifier. It's a qualifying word. There was something that they should have done that they did not do, and therefore they were judged unsuitable.
And the invitation was withdrawn. In Genesis chapter 15, starting with verse 1, we read this. It happened some time later that the word of Yahweh was spoken to Abram in a vision. Have no fear, Abram. I am your shield. Your reward will be great.
Wow.
My Lord Yahweh, Abram replied, what do you intend to give me? I go childless. Then Abram said, see, you have given me no descendants. Some man of my household will be my heir. And then this word of Yahweh was spoken to him. He shall not be your heir. Your heir shall be of your own flesh and blood. Then taking him outside, he said, look up to heaven and count the stars if you can. Such will be your descendants, he told him. Abram put his faith in Yahweh, who counted this as making him righteous. I am Yahweh, he said to him, who brought you out of Ur the Chaldees to make you heir to this land. God promised Abram that his descendant from his own loins, as he says, would be the fulfillment of the promise. And God issued the invitation to Abram and said, the land of your wandering will be the home of your descendants. Now, the home, the country, the nation, the kingdom of his descendants, do you know what that was in the parable?
The kingdom.
Exactly. The kingdom. It was the wedding hall. Where did they need to go once they were in the promised land? To go to the wedding.
Right.
You see, what they needed to do, what God ultimately wanted them to do, was he wanted them to learn righteousness in the wilderness and enter the promised land as his kingdom. And the nations that were living in the land at the time that his righteous nation would enter would be overthrown. Not by force of arms. Because what God told them would happen is that he would send his, so to speak, ahead of them. It was his army.
Angels?
No.
His servants.
Hornets. Wild beasts.
Wow.
Lions. Bear. He would send the wild animals ahead of them. And the people of the land would flee.
Wow.
And his righteous nation would enter land that had houses already built, fields already planted.
Food was actually already on the table.
Wow. That's a history would change if they followed that.
What was it that Israel rejected? And I didn't say who was it, I said what. What was it that Israel rejected? What were they not interested in, as it says here?
Following what God said.
Bottom line, this was it. This is only it. This isn't a list of things. This is it. They rejected the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah.
They rejected the truth, and they preferred the lie.
Wow. And they paid the price.
And that is what determines the outcome for everyone in the judgment. Whether you accept the truth, uphold it, and live by it, you accept the lie, uphold the lie, and live by it. Now you may say, I would never live a lie. Who in their right mind would? But if you believe a lie and follow the lie, refusing to acknowledge that it is a lie, then you have rejected the truth. Just like the Israelites did in the wilderness. And you can say to yourself, well, if I was in the wilderness with the Israelites and Moses and Aaron, I would uphold the truth. Well, let me tell you, you are not in the wilderness with the Israelites and Moses and Aaron and God in the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire and the sanctuary. You were not there when the 10 plagues fell on Egypt. You were not there when the waters of the Red Sea were divided. You were not there. So you can't say, if I were there, what you would do. But what you can do is say, I am here now. I am alive now on the face of this planet. I choose the truth. Then you need to take everything that you have been taught is the truth and throw it in the dumpster. What your parents taught you, what your teachers taught you about God, throw it in the dumpster. That is not what the Israelites did in the wilderness. God may have taken them out of Egypt, and they followed Moses out of Egypt into the wilderness. But the Israelites needed to take Egypt out of them. They needed to get rid of everything that they had learned in Egypt. And it was harder for them to get Egypt out of them than it was for God to get them out of Egypt. Why? Because they weren't interested in what God was trying to get them to do. They weren't interested. They didn't see any need for them to change. God, he was fine, you know. He seemed a little strict, though, because he brought them out there into a place that had no food, and he didn't feed them. He let them get hungry, starved. I mean, they're wondering what on earth, how they were. They said to Moses, you brought us out here to die of hunger when we could have been in Egypt and we could eat from the flesh pots in Egypt. To acknowledge, now they may have known this, but what they failed to acknowledge is that in Egypt, they were operating on hive mentality.
And so people hear that word and realize what word you, since you, I didn't understand what word you were using earlier in our previous discussion, so I was thinking in a different way. So to clear this up right now, when you said hive mentality, it's H-I-V-E, as in beehive. Now, I originally understood that. Conversation to start with H-I-G-H.
Yeah, no.
Elevated yeah. mentality as a
hive.
Yep.
Hive mentality. Mm-hmm. Hive mentality is it is how the bees operate and the ants operate.
Right.
Group think and group work.
Yes. You are a part of a collective,
mm-hmm.
and the collective has producers, and they produce at the behest of the ruler.
Without question.
Now, superficially, that would sound great, wouldn't it? One for all and all for one, and everybody working together in unity and harmony. And
it is when the unifying factor is the truth. But if the unifying factor is a lie,
yeah.
that then presents a whole different set of circumstances.
And that takes it right back to the same problem before, being able to differentiate between truth and lies and where to draw the line and let.
Now, I know that those who have grown up in this country, the land of the free and the home of the brave, which are neither free nor brave, because if they were brave, they would be free. Here's the thing. Those who grew up under communism in Russia knew only the ideology and practice of communism in Russia, which was hive mentality. And Nazi Germany was hive mentality. You never questioned what the leader said. You never questioned it. In these, the Nuremberg trials, you know, they said, why did you, you know, execute hundreds of people? I was ordered to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what does your conscience say? Mm-hmm. Well, my conscience said, you know, no, but my conscience had no place in the authority of that system.
Religion does its best to maintain a hard mentality too, does it not?
That's where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
Religion. Hive mentality. The sworn enemy of hive mentality is the truth. Those who were invited were not interested because they had grown up in a system they were familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave them bare necessities of life. This God that showed up out of nowhere and promised them all kinds of things was looking like he was not going to deliver on anything and had deceived them all. And these people were not going to stand for the deception any longer. They were going back to Egypt. And they admitted life in Egypt was not easy and they didn't really like it. But at least they had food and water and a shelter to live.
A home.
And the Advent people, those who believe that the Son of God is coming back, kind of lost the hope and surety that the Messiah is coming back. So, the wedding is still ready. But as those who were invited proved to be unworthy, go to the crossroads in the town and invite everyone you can find to the wedding. Go to the crossroads in the town and invite everyone you can find to the wedding. So these servants went out onto the roads and collected together everyone they could find. Bad and good alike. What did they do? They collected. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Gathered?
They gathered together.
What do you gather typically? Crops. Yes. And how do you gather? You have to do in order to gather crops? Harvest.
Yeah, harvest.
Harvest. So you're harvesting. Mm-hmm. How do you harvest?
When it's ripe.
Not when do you harvest, how? Yeah, so you go out in the field.
Yeah.
Now, what is the field? Well, where did they go out?
To the field.
Where did
to
they
the
go out? To the roads.
Crossroads.
To the crossroads. Mm-hmm. To the roads. They went out to the roads.
Okay.
Where people Street. Gather.
So what is the field? There's roads, I guess.
I guess.
Every road goes through a field, correct? So when the harvesters are going out to harvest, what is it they're doing? Is this the final judgment?
No.
No. This isn't the final judgment. What they're doing is they're harvesting everything. All right. Now, we're going to go back to Matthew chapter 13. That's only a few pages before where I'm reading. And I'm going to read this other parable to you. Starting with verse 13.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with verse 24. Mm-hmm. He put another parable before them. The kingdom of the heavens may be compared to a man who sowed good seed in his field. Now, just stop there, and I'm going to take you down to verse 36. Then leaving the crowds, he went to the house, and his disciples came to him and said, "Explain the parable about the darnel in the field to us." He said in reply, "The sower of the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world."
Wow.
Where are the roads and the crossroads? They are in the field because they're in the world. Mm-hmm. So the field is the world. Okay, back to where he stated the parable, verse 25. While everybody was asleep, his enemy came and sowed darnel all among the wheat and made off. The owner's servants went to him and said, "Sir, was it not good seed that you sowed in your field? If so, where does this darnel come from?" "Some enemy has done this," he answered. And the servant said, "Do you want us to go and weed it out?" But he said, "No, because when you weed out the darnel, you might pull up wheat with it. Let them both grow till the harvest, and at the harvest time, I shall say to the reapers." Who are the reapers? Well, it says it in the parable, when I was explaining it, we will go there. But I want you to look again at the parable in chapter 21. I mean, 22, sorry. Chapter 22. The wedding is ready, but those who were invited proved to be unworthy. "Go to the crossroads in the town and invite everyone you can find to the wedding." So these servants went out to the roads and what? Collected together everyone they could find, bad and good alike. The bad would be the darnel. Mm-hmm. The good would be
the wheat.
Bad and good alike. All are harvested. But who are these servants? See, the servants, go back here. We're going to go to the explanation now. The field is the world. The good seed, the subjects of the kingdom. The darnel, the subjects of the evil one. The enemy who sowed them, the devil. The harvest is the end of the world. The reapers are
angels.
Angels.
Wow.
What is an angel, by the way?
A messenger.
Messenger, that's what it means.
Right.
Typically, it is a heavenly messenger. But we're not the prophets of old servants.
Mm-hmm.
Were they messengers?
Yes.
They were sent from heaven, but they were of earth.
They were commissioned from heaven. They were heavenly messengers.
Mm-hmm.
They were heavenly messengers.
Mm-hmm.
So the angels, the reapers, the angels are heavenly messengers. And who told about who the heavenly messengers are? Turn now to Revelation. A heavenly messenger would be representing what? Not who, what?
Kingdom of heaven.
The heavens.
Okay.
Revelation chapter 14, and starting with verse 1. Next in my vision, I saw Mount Zion, and standing on it, a lamb, who had with him 144,000 people, all with his name and his father's name written on their foreheads. I heard a sound coming out of the sky like the sound of an ocean or a roar of thunder. It seemed to be the sound of harpists playing harps. There in front of the throne, they were singing a new hymn in the presence of the four animals and the elders, a hymn that could only be learned by the 144,000 who had been redeemed from the world.
And the NASB has the word purchased there.
What is the world?
Earth. The field.
The field.
The field. Yeah.
The field. And what was the field? It was the place where the seed was planted.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously these are the result of the seed that was planted, and it would have to be the good seed, because if it was the bad seed, they would not be here in heaven with the name of the Lamb and with the Father's name written on their forehead. They would certainly not be in the heaven standing on Mount Zion. Mount Zion is the place where the victors stand. It is the authority place, the place of authority. The Lamb is standing there. The 144,000 are standing with him. They have his name and the Father's name. And they are what? Because it says it right here. These are the ones who have kept their virginity, purity,
chastity,
whatever you want to say. They did not participate with harlot.
They have not been defiled by...
Not been defiled.
A woman. And that woman is not a physical... This is not physical. This is spiritual.
They follow the Lamb wherever he goes. What does that make them?
Servant.
It makes them a disciple of the Lamb.
Yeah.
They are disciples. Because is that not what the 12 did when the Messiah, the Lamb, behold the Lamb of God, as John the Baptist said. The 12 that followed him wherever he went. They follow the Lamb wherever he goes. They have been redeemed from amongst men to be the first fruits for God. So the field is the world. Who harvests the first fruits?
Well, if we can, if we go back to Matthew 24:42-51. The faithful and wise servant is the one that harvests this 144,000.
So what it looks like is the results of the good seed produce first fruits. When we go back to the Daniel 2 account of the vision that Nebuchadnezzar had, at the end of that vision, there was this stone that had been cut out without hands from the quarry. What do you do with a stone that you cut out of a quarry? A stone out of a quarry.
You use it to build something.
Right.
So this stone is the first one cut out of the quarry, but it cuts itself out. So who harvests the first fruits from the world? They do. The grain itself harvests itself. And they come together, they are collected together by themselves, and then what? The king comes and takes them to the heavens. Now, I'm not talking about a rapture in any way, shape, or form. I am talking about the harvest. And the first fruits that are harvested, we are told, are 144,000. This is not the full number of the harvest. This is the first fruits.
It's not even the first fruits. It is, if you go back into Leviticus and into the sanctuary service, the first harvest was barley harvest. But the first barley harvest was a shock of barley that was taken all by itself and presented before the Lord.
Which so belonged to God.
God. And then after that happened, then the rest of the harvest, when it matured, then the rest of that barley harvest was taken, and then sometime later after that, wheat harvest.
And the 144,000 are that group which belong to God, and that is why they have God's name. They belong to God. They belong to God because they are his heirs, his family. They are sons and daughters of God. Not in word, not in experience, but in fact, sons and daughters of God, just as the Son of God is the Son of God, these are sons and daughters of God. They have been born from above.
Revelation 12:17.
Verse 5. Everyone needs to consider seriously and take it to heart. They never allowed a lie to pass their lips. There's no lie in their mouth. Well, if there's no lie coming from their mouth, then what are they speaking only?
Truth.
The truth. And no fault. can be found in them. There's no sin in them. There's no lie coming from their mouth. They are perfect. They are righteous. They are righteous in fact, not in faith. They collected together everyone they could find, bad and good alike, back in Matthew 22. And the wedding hall was filled with guests. So when we take into consideration all the parables given about the marriage and the marriage feast and who was invited and who wouldn't come and then who was invited and who wouldn't come and then who was invited and then they all came, but there's something different about this. You see, when the Israelites entered the promised land, most of them were bad, and there were very few who would be considered good, but none who were perfect. And God continually tried to press upon them the importance of learning righteousness, practicing righteousness, and that was the only way that they could become and be his people, and they never did. So what he said here is, I'm going to plant good seed, the word he spoke, the testimony he gave. That's the seed he planted in the world. Then the evil one came along and he planted seed. And obviously the seed he planted sprouted and grew. Mm-hmm. And these seeds grew lies. So we have lies and the truth growing together.
In the same field.
Mm-hmm. In the same field. And the harvesters who come at the harvest. And what is harvested first?
The darnel.
Mm.
All of it.
First fruits.
Oh, okay. Yes, you're right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
First fruits.
Mm.
Then, what do? We go over to chapter 25. When the Feast of First Fruits was conducted, Dennis, I know you know about the Feast of First Fruits. When the Feast of First Fruits was conducted, how much of the harvest was harvested?
One single shock of barley.
And the reason it's called first fruits is that they are the first to ripen to a point where they can be harvested.
They actually planted just outside of one of the gates of the city of Jerusalem a very small patch that only planted that early so that it would be the first fruits.
And when that is harvested, what does it mean?
That the rest is just about ready.
The harvest has begun. The harvest has begun. So when the 144,000 are harvested as the first fruits of the harvest, what does that mean?
It's just about
the harvest has begun. There's not going to be, you know, another year and another harvest and that. When they are harvested, that means the harvest is set. Matthew chapter 25. And I know we're running out of time.
Yeah.
As usual. Then the kingdom of the heavens will be like this. 10 bridesmaids took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were sensible. The foolish ones did take lamps, But they brought no oil, whereas the sensible ones took flasks of oil as well as their lamps. The bridegroom was late. Some say delay. It's basically the same thing. The bridegroom was late, and they all grew drowsy and fell asleep. But at midnight, there was a cry. The bridegroom is here. What does that mean? The bridegroom has come.
Yep.
And you see, the issue here is that most Christians use this as a metaphor for the coming in the clouds.
The second coming at the end of it.
But that does not fit the paradigm of this. This happens before that.
It would make no sense at all for these that are called the kingdom of the heavens to sleep all the way through the great tribulation.
Right.
And that's assuming that anyone could sleep spiritually through the great tribulation.
Right.
And not only would the time when every eye shall see him occur, and they're still sleeping, so their eyes didn't see him, and they had to be awakened and said, okay, he's here, come on, get up, wake up, look, there he is. So it's ridiculous to think that the second coming awakens the bridesmaids. So it has to occur at some point in time before the second coming, and at some point in time before the judgment, the great tribulation. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, the foolish say we didn't prepare. We weren't ready.
Mm-hmm.
So could you share some of your oil? What is that?
Hey. Because the prudent, the wise, are wise because they know they cannot get to the marriage feast without all of their oil. If they
there
share,
will not be enough for us and you too.
Exactly.
That is a compromise. What they are being asked to do is to compromise the truth, which is what the oil is, with their lies. In other words, can't we mix it together?
Can't we all get along?
You know, can't the darnel and the wheat kind of, you know, just go together?
Yeah.
I would suggest that learning truth is a individual do-for-yourself kind of project.
You see, those without the oil are like the guest without the robe. And you know what happened to the guest without the robe.
He was bound hand and foot and thrown out into the dark.
In the outer darkness, and he was on the other side of the closed and locked door.
Wow.
We'll continue this tomorrow. Thank you, Rick, and thank you, everyone, for being here. We'll encourage you to go to our websites, especially spiritoftruthministry.net. And we also encourage you to join us tomorrow at 10 a.m. Pacific time for another edition of The Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling. On behalf of Spirit of Truth Ministry, this is Dennis saying so long for now.